Try it again. Let's do it again. Yes, gobs and gobs of tyranny in this crazy world. Welcome to Eurofolk Radio. This is Bloodlines. Today is May 12, 2019, and we're going to continue our series on the history of Herod. Today will be part 18. Okay, and my usual co-host today is Pastor Steve. How are you doing, Pastor Steve?
I'm doing fine. Wasn't that part of the title a song? Hark the Herod angels sing. Never mind.
Yeah, you sound like a Judeo-Christian.
Too much coffee, man.
Okay, hyper Eurofolk Radio this morning, folks, but welcome. And let's get right to it. Even though there's a lot of crazy news, we have other shows to cover the craziness. And I think we're almost done. We may have two or three episodes left of Herod from Josephus, who was a Judahite, not a Jew, folks. It's a bad translation. It shouldn't be the Antiquities of the Jews. It should be the Antiquities of Judah, because the Edomites are always counted as a separate people in both in Scripture and in Josephus, as we've abundantly proven on these shows here. So last week we ended on Book 17, Chapter 1, Section 1, where Antipater, who is an Edomite, he's a full-blooded Edomite, son of Herod, and I forget what his mother's name was, but the other sons that Antipater murdered were half-breeds. They were sons of Mariamne, who was a Judahite wife of Herod. So Antipater, in order to clear the way for his own ascension to the throne, murdered his two half-brothers, and there's all kinds of strife in the family now because Herod suspects his own Edomite son now of wanting to murder him to take the throne before his time is due. Okay, that sets the stage for where we're at here. Book 17, Chapter 1, Section 2. You want to pick it up from there, Pastor Steve?
All right. Yeah, too much fun. I've been up all night programming music tracks.
Right.
Because we have a lot of empty slots. And, man, I've got some killer music that you'll be hearing on EFR.
Yeah,
the new system is very easy to navigate. I'm not having any trouble with it. I've got all the stuff loaded up. Well, you know, I've been at it all evening, and I pretty much get it down. You go to the help section, and it tells you exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
So I hope my sound is pleasing. I have this new broadcast microphone, and I hope it sounds all right for everybody.
Yeah, it's very clear.
Let's get into section 2 of chapter 1. Now, Herod brought up his son's children with great care. For Alexander had two sons by Glaphyra, and Aristobulus had three sons by Bernice, Salome's daughter, and two daughters. And as his friends were once with him, he presented the children before them, and deploring the hard fortune of his own sons, he prayed that no such ill fortune would befall these who were their children. Okay. but that they might improve in virtue and obtain what they justly deserved and might make him amends for his care of their education. Okay. He also caused them to be betrothed against they should come to the proper age of marriage, the elder of Alexander's sons to Pheroras' daughter, and Antipater's daughter to Aristobulus' eldest son. He also allotted one of Aristobulus' daughters to Antipater's son, and Aristobulus' other daughter to Herod, a son of his own, who was born to him by the high priest's daughter. For it is the ancient practice among us to have many wives of the same, at the same time. Yes.
But they're also
and he
to be
named
Israel.
One of his sons like Herod Jr. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now, the king made these espousals for the children out of commiseration for them now that they were fatherless, as trying to render Antipater kind to them by these intermarriages. Mm. But Antipater did not fail to bear the same temper of mind to his brother's children, which he had borne to his brothers themselves.
Hmm.
Whom he killed.
Yes.
And his father's concern about them provoked his indignation against them upon this supposal that they would become greater than ever his brothers had been. While Archelaus, a king, would support his daughter's sons, and Pheroras, a tetrarch, would accept one of the daughters as a wife to his son. What provoked him also was this, that all the multitude would so commiserate these fatherless children and so hate him for making them fatherless, that all would come out, since they were no strangers to his vile disposition toward his brothers. He contrived, therefore, to overturn his father's settlements, as thinking it a terrible thing that they should be so related to him and be so powerful as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Herod yielded to him and changed his resolution at his entreaty, and the determination now was that Antipater himself should marry Aristobulus's daughter, and Antipater's son should marry Pheroras' daughter. So the espousals for the marriages were changed after this manner, even without the king's real approval.
Wow.
Over to you. Section 3. Such intrigue. Boy, oh boy.
Antipater is paranoia to the nth degree.
He's paranoia personified.
That's right. That's right. So even his grandchildren he sees as competition. Amazing stuff. Okay, for those who just joined us, again, we're in Book 17, Chapter 1. We just finished Section 2 of Chapter 1, and I will start reading Section 3. Now, Herod the king had at this time 9 wives. One of them Antipater's mother, and another the high priest's daughter, by whom he had a son of his own name. Now this would probably be a pure-blooded Israelite, because the high priest, unless the high priest was already a half-breed, I'm not aware of any evidence to the contrary that the high priest at this time was still an Israelite. So probably a half-breed. He had also one who was his mother's daughter, and another his sister's daughter, which two had no children. One of his wives also was of the Samaritan nation, whose sons were Antipas and Archelaus, and whose daughter was Olympias, which daughter was afterwards married to Joseph, the king's brother's son. A lot of nepotism going on here. But Archelaus can't tell these people apart, really. But Archelaus and Antipas were brought up with a certain private man at Rome. Herod had also two wives, Cleopatra of Jerusalem, and by her he had his sons Herod and Philip, which last was also brought up at Rome. Paulus was also one of his wives, who bare him his son Phasaelus, and besides these, he had for his wives Phaedra and Elpis, by whom he had his daughters Roxana and Salome. So that's another Salome. As for his elder daughters by the same mother with Alexander and Aristobulus, and whom Pheroras neglected to marry, he gave the one in marriage to Antipater, the king's sister's son, and the other to Phasaelus, the brother's son, and this was the posterity of Herod. Okay, so we got one horribly inbred family here, folks.
Well, they have a footnote here for section 3. Those who have a mind to know all the family and descendants of Antipater the Idumean and of Herod the Great, his son, and have a memory to preserve them all distinctly, may consult Josephus, Antiquities, B. 18, chapter 5, section 4, and Jewish Wars, etc., etc., etc. There's that footnote there. There's other references, but we really don't need to worry about all of that.
Right.
This is more complicated enough.
Right. Yeah, it's probably not even worth remembering all these people and their names because they're all going to die really soon. So, all right, chapter 2, Pastor Steve.
All right. Concerning Zimarras, the Babylonian Judahite, it says Jew here, concerning the plots laid by Antipater against his father and something about the Pharisees. Section 1. And now it was that Herod, being desirous of securing himself on the side of the Trachonites, resolved to build a village as large as a city for the Judahites, in the middle of that country, which might make his own country difficult to be assaulted, and thus he might be at hand to make sallies upon them and do them a mischief. Accordingly, this guy's a real peach. When he understood that there was a man that was a Judahite come out of Babylon with 500 horsemen, all of whom could shoot their arrows as they rode on horseback, and with 100 of his relations had passed over the Euphrates and now abode at Antioch by Daphne of Syria, where Saturninus, who was then president, had given them a place for habitation called Valatha.
Valhalla.
I was going to say the same thing, but I held off.
Yeah.
he sent for this man with the multitude him and promised to give him land in the toparchy called Batanea.
Toparchy.
Which
that's
whatever
a new one.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which country is bounded with Trachonitis, as desirous to make that his habitation a guard to himself. In other words, they were going to be buffer troops, okay?
Uh-huh.
He also engaged to let him hold the country free from tribute, that they should dwell entirely without paying such customs as used to be paid, and gave it to him tax free. In other words, he was letting him go by without taxes.
Right.
If he would guard one of his borders.
Right.
That
very
was
good.
The deal with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Over to you, section 2.
Well, they couldn't have been Jews. They had to be real Israelites of Judah because they were good horsemen and outstanding archers. You don't get that among Jews. You know, they have two left feet and ten left fingers. I hope that's understandable. Toparchy. Definition by Merriam-Webster, a small state or district consisting of a few cities or towns. So, there's the toparchy right there. Valatha. Valatha is a toparchy. Section 2. The Babylonian was induced by these offers to come hither. Yeah, I'll make you a deal.
No, so Batania was the toparchy.
Oh, it was? Batania. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so he took possession of the land and built in it a fortress and a village and named it Patira, whereby this man became a safeguard to the inhabitants against the Trachonites, and preserved those Judahites who came out of Babylon to offer their sacrifices at Jerusalem from being hurt by the Trachonite robbers. So we got the Trachonite robbers again still involved here. So that a great number came to him from all those parts where the ancient Judahite laws were observed. Now it's absolute proof that we're talking about Judahites. And the country became full of people by reason of their universal freedom from taxes. That's like Texas and Florida. Everybody's going there because there's no taxes. This continued during the life of Herod, but when Philip, who was tetrarch after him, took the government, he made them pay some small taxes, and that for a little while only. And Agrippa the Great, and his son of the same name, although they harassed him greatly, yet would they not take their liberty away. Well, I mean, their security. You know, you got to pay for security. From whom, when the Romans have now taken the government into their own hands, they still gave them the privilege of their freedom, but oppressed them entirely with the imposition of taxes. Oh, that's the Romans. They they will tax everybody. Of which matter I shall treat more accurately in the progress of this history. Over to you, section 3.
Well, they got a footnote on that.
Okay.
And this is now wanting.
Okay, so he forgot about writing this history. Okay.
Right.
Section 3.
At length, Zamaris, the Babylonian, to whom Herod had given that country for a possession, died, having lived virtuously and left children of a good character behind him, one of whom was Jusim, who was famous for his valor and taught his Babylonians how to ride their horses. And a troop of them were guards to the before-mentioned kings. And when Jusim was dead in his old age, he left a son whose name was Philip, one of great strength in his hands and in other respects also more eminent for his valor than any of his contemporaries, on which account there was a confidence and firm friendship between him and King Agrippa. He had also an army which he maintained as great as that of a king, which he exercised and led wherever soever he had occasion to march.
Okay.
So in other words, he just went anywhere he wants because he had a big army.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of people with big armies do that. Right?
Works well, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we see here that the testimony about Babylon is there still were lots of true Judahites in Babylon. And those are the people to whom Peter was sent. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, not to Rome, folks. Peter did not go to Rome. He went to Babylon. A lot of Judeo-Christians like to insist that Rome, since Rome is akin to Babylon, is kind of a Babylon, that Peter went to Rome. But that's not true. He went to the real Babylon. Okay, section 4. When the affairs of Herod were in the condition I have described, which is total disarray, all the public affairs depended upon Antipater, which is what he wanted. Okay. And his power was such that he could do good turns to as many as he pleased, and this by his father's concession, in hopes of his goodwill and fidelity to him. And this till he ventured to use his power still further, because his wicked designs were concealed from his father. This is the type of son that Herod really deserves. And he made him believe everything he said. He was
well, these people being Edomites, they didn't love their brothers. They didn't love their father. They didn't love their mother. They didn't love each other.
Viper
they didn't
love.
Love their wives. They didn't love anybody.
It's all about power.
It's all about power and money and possessions. These are the Edomites.
Status, right?
That rule us
ego
today. They are the same now as they were when. Then they have not changed.
Yeah, remember Herod's
Nor will they.
Yeah, that's right. Impossible. The leopard cannot change its spots.
It's in the DNA.
It's in
the
DNA.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and the one-upmanship and, the interesting thing about these Jews is they will prostrate themselves before people of power such as the Caesars, but only for effect, right? They will conspire against Caesar every chance they get, but in public they will demean themselves, sycophants.
They are the masters of suck-up-ism.
There you go.
Yes.
While they're still plotting your demise, they will suck up to you and plot your demise at the same time. There's always a dagger in the Jew's mind. Let's continue. He was also formidable to all, not so much on account of the power and authority he had as for the shrewdness of his vile attempts beforehand. But he who principally cultivated a friendship with him was Pheroras, who received the like marks of his friendship. While Antipater had cunningly encompassed him about by a company of women, whom he placed as spies about him. For Pheroras was greatly enslaved to his wife and to her mother and to her sister, and this notwithstanding the hatred he bare them for the indignities they had offered to his virgin daughters. Okay, well, they may have been virgins, but they were half-breeds. They were Edomites. Yet did he bear them, withstand them, or tolerate them, and nothing was to be done without the women who had got this man into their circle and continued still to assist each other in all things, insomuch that Antipater was entirely addicted to them both by himself and by his mother. For these four women said all one and the same thing. Now, you can't believe that. If four women talk to each other about what they should tell you, you know you're not going to get the truth. Okay. There's a little gossip and conniving going on here for sure.
It's like the Democrats. They're all walking in lockstep, and they all have their little key words that they use.
Right.
Russia conspiracy. Russia conspiracy. Yeah. Russia conspiracy. Same deal.
We have the evidence. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
All the evidence that there was collusion.
Believe the woman.
They're still doing it.
Right.
Even after it's been proved a lie, they're still repeating it.
Believe Diane Feinstein, who had a Chinese spy in her employ for 20 years, and she didn't know it. Can you believe
but
that?
Him make good chop suey.
Right. And he'd take lots of America money. Yeah, lots of America money.
Him make good chop suey in kitchen.
Fortune cookies, too. But the opinions of Pheroras and Antipater were different in some points of no consequence. Okay, so where they differed, it was, a small
deal.
Didn't
mean anything.
Yeah, it didn't mean anything. But the king's sister, Salome, was their antagonist, who for a good while had looked about all their affairs and was apprised that this their friendship was made, in order to do Herod some mischief, and was disposed to inform the king of it. Oh, no. Okay.
She's carrying tales.
Oh, boy. It's against her own brethren. Right?
These are vipers.
Yeah, right. You viper are. Love. It's viper love, folks. Okay. Okay, where did I leave off here? Oh, and she was disposed to inform the king of it. And since these people knew that their friendship was very disagreeable to Herod, as tending to do him a mischief, they contrived that their meeting should not be discovered, so they pretended to hate one another. This is like a soap opera. CBS, NBC, ABC soap opera, folks. And abuse one another when time served, and especially when Herod was present, or when anyone was there that would tell him. So instead of pretending to like each other, which is what most people do, these guys actually liked each other but pretended to hate one another to fool Salome and the rest of them. But still, their intimacy was firmer than ever when they were private. Okay, and this was the course they took. But they could not conceal from Salome neither their first contrivance when they set about these their intentions, nor when they had made some progress in them. But she searched out everything, and aggravating their relations to her brother, declared to him as well as their secret assemblies and compotations, there's another word, as their counsels taken in a clandestine manner, which if they were not in order to destroy him, they might well enough have been open and public. And I'm sure if Salome didn't have a spy to discover everything, she would just make stuff up. But to the appearance, they are at variance and speak about one another as if they intended one another mischief, but agree so well together when they are out of the sight of the multitude. For when they are alone by themselves, they act in concert. And they should have got rid of Salome, right? But she would have found out about it too. And profess that they will never leave off their friendship, but will fight against those from whom they conceal their designs. And thus did she search out these things, and get a perfect knowledge of them, and then told her brother of them, who understood also of himself a great deal of what she said, but still durst not depend upon it, because of the suspicions he had of this his sister's calumnies. No, you have to believe you have to believe the woman. For there was a certain sect of men that were Judahites who valued themselves highly upon the exact skill they had in the law of their fathers, and made men believe they were highly favored by God, by whom this set of women were inveigled. Oh, wait a minute. By this time, they were no longer Judahites. The Edomites had taken over because Herod had slain them, slain the Judahites. And these, now, of course, these were posturing now, pretending that they had exact skill. These are those that are called the sect of the Pharisees, who were in a capacity of greatly opposing kings. A cunning sect they were, and soon elevated to a pitch or open fighting and doing mischief. Accordingly, when all the people of the Judeans gave assurance of their goodwill to Caesar and to the king's government, these very men did not swear, being above 6,000. And when the king imposed a fine upon them, Pheroras's wife paid their fine for them. That's what happens to, what's that, Hasidic sect? The Hasidic
well,
sect
they,
are very,
they
like
were
to pay
not
taxes.
All Edomite Jews.
No,
there were
all.
A lot of Israelites in there that were deceived Israelites.
Right.
Remember, it, Paul was a Pharisee,
right.
A son of a Pharisee.
And some were complicit. Some were complicit
okay.
Israelites.
They were hornswoggled by the rhetoric, the same way the Judeo-Christians are today.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
They believe all that nonsense. And it took Paul being struck blind and then seeing the Christ to convert him. It took an act of God to do that.
Right.
Because he was the persecutor as a Pharisee of the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got people in these Judeo-Christian churches today that are Israelites, but they are under the deception just like these Pharisee Israelites were back then.
Right.
They were fooled.
Yes, yes, very good. Yeah, so it was a mixture of Edomites, rebellious Israelites, and deceived Israelites. Certainly were complicit with the Pharisees because they understood where the power lay. Okay.
Correct.
All right, okay. But in order to requite, now Ferarus' wife paid their fine. In order to requite which kindness of hers, since they were believed to have foreknowledge of things to come by divine inspiration, they foretold how God had decreed that Herod's government should cease. This requires an explanation here. This prophecy was made much earlier, and probably not by the current Pharisees, that Herod's government should cease, but they were they held this prophecy with them as the Pharisee prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and his posterity should be deprived of it, but that the kingdom should come to her and Ferarus. Now that's a lie. Right?
And to their children.
Right? These predictions were not concealed from Salome, but were told the king. Man, you can't tell her anything. She blabs it to everybody. As also how they had perverted some persons about the palace itself. So the king slew such of the Pharisees as were principally accused. I bet the Pharisees won't trust her again. All right? And Bagoas, the eunuch, and one Carus, who exceeded all men of that time in comeliness, and one that was his catamite. Man, this chapter has all kinds of new words. He slew also those of his own family who had consented to what the Pharisees foretold. Man, you better not prophesy that Herod is going to die.
This is worse than Washington.
Yeah, worse. Far worse. Yeah, yeah.
But more like Arkansas.
Give it some time. Arkansided. And for Bagoas, he had been puffed up by them. It's easy to do to a Jew, as though he should be named the father and the benefactor of whom? Him, who by the prediction was foretold to be their appointed king. Oh, you're going to be king, Mr. Bagoas, we predict it, for that this king would have all the things in his power, and would enable Bagoas to marry and to have children of his own body begotten. Man, flattery will get you everywhere, right?
Man, these people.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But you better be careful that if you flatter one person, that the other guy doesn't hear it, right? Because the other guy will be jealous and might want to kill you. This is crazy. This is democracy, folks. Back to you.
Yeah. That mob rule.
Right.
It depends on which mob you're with, man.
That's right.
We're going to make you an offer that you can't refuse.
Mm-hmm. The Jewish mob. All right. Chapter 3.
All right. My turn. Mm-hmm. Concerning the hostility between Herod Steen and Ferarus, how Herod Steen sent Antipater to Caesar, and the death of Ferarus.
Okay.
I told you
they were all going to die. So here we go.
That is just killing each other left and right. This is hilarious, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that, but these people... Yeah, I wish they'd start doing that in Washington now.
There you go. Yeah. We may see that.
Kill each other. Well, Pelosi may kill off Watchman-Face Cowfarts.
Sandy Cowfarts, right? Because she's a little too radical. You know, Sandy Cowfarts is a lot like Salome.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right?
And all these people, these FBI directors and all these people that have been conspiring behind the scenes and lying and making up stuff and false documents and all that, that just matches this book. Because right? They draw up whatever documents blaming somebody, and old Herod would just whack them.
Yeah.
So, and they're doing the same thing up there, man. They, General, what's his face? They got him locked up.
Yeah. So you can imagine Solomon must have been paying all of these spies, you know, who were or servants, okay,
bestowing favors,
right? But what happens if somebody else grabs the same person and asks to spy for them? Okay, now they're being paid by two people to spy on the other. And wow, what do you say, right?
Well, double agents. They
there you go.
Double agents in the government forever.
Amen.
People working for a couple of countries.
Right.
Okay, section 1 of chapter 3. When Herod had punished those Pharisees who had been convicted of the foregoing crimes, he gathered an assembly together of his friends and accused of his friends, right, stack deck, and accused Pharaoh's wife and ascribing the abuses of the virgins to the impudence of that woman, brought an accusation against her for the dishonor she had brought upon them, that she had studiously introduced a quarrel between him and his brother, and by her ill temper had brought them into a state of war, both by her words and actions, and that the fines which he had laid had not been paid, and the offenders had escaped punishment by her means, and that nothing which had of late been done had been done without her. So she had her little pause in everything. Mm-hmm. For which reason, Pheroras would do well if he would of his own accord and by his own command and not at my entreaty or by following my opinion, put this his wife away as one that will still be the occasion of war between you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Pheroras, if you value your relation to me, put this wife of yours away.
Yeah.
For by this means you will continue to be a brother to me and will abide in your love to me.
Viper love. Lots of viper love here.
Boy. Then said Pheroras, although he was pressed hard by the former words, that as he would not do so unjust a thing as to renounce his brotherly relation to him, so would he not leave off his affection for his wife, that he would rather choose to die than to live and be deprived of a wife that was so dear to him.
Wow.
But Herod put off his anger against Pheroras on these accounts, although he himself thereby underwent a very uneasy punishment. However, he forbade Antipater and his mother to have any conversation with Pheroras and directed them to take care to avoid the assemblies of the women, which they promised to do, but still got together one occasion served. And both Pheroras and Antipater had their own merry meetings. Well, I wouldn't do that. You can trust me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a good Jew. You can
gossip,
believe me.
The gossip fest. You can't leave the gossip fest. It's too entertaining.
Oh man. The report went also that Antipater had criminal sexual intercourse with Pheroras' wife.
Okay.
And that they were brought together by Antipater's mother.
So, and of course, she was a pure Edomite, Antipater's mother. She's a matchmaker in adultery. Yes. What do we have today, folks? Hollywood? Matchmaking and adultery? You know? Debauchery? You name it. Everything goes in Hollywood and in Washington.
She's gonna, this is the deal. She's going to be my wife this week.
Yeah, right.
But next week, I'm going to rent her out.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah. And hire a maid to do the housework.
Hire several maids.
Yeah, right. To keep everything clean. Right.
Yeah, well.
Well, you know, this kind of reminds me, this assembly of women where everybody goes to get news, that's like the presidential press conferences where all the CBS, NBC, ABC, all of the whores, the prostitutes, get together and gossip and pronounce fake news. So we've got that going on. The parallels between Judea under the Herods in modern America and the modern world, actually, are incredible.
Glaring. It's glaring. It's a glaring similarity.
So now I want to see the day where they start whacking each other because they hate each other so much. All right, section two. But Antipater had now a suspicion of his father. Man, to suspect your own father, and the father suspect his own son. And the mothers are making illicit, arrangements between people's wives and husbands. It's amazing, folks. I mean, it's just like Hollywood. But Antipater had now a suspicion of his father and was afraid that the effects of his hatred to him might increase. So he wrote to his friends at Rome and bade them to send to Herod that he would immediately send Antipater to Caesar. Which, when it was done, Herod sent Antipater thither and sent most noble presents along with him, as also his testament, wherein Antipater was appointed to be his successor, and that if Antipater should die first, his son Herod Philip, by the high priest's daughter, should succeed. And together with Antipater there went to Rome Sylleus the Arabian, although he had done nothing of all that Caesar had enjoined him. Yeah, in other words, Caesar might want to give him a good talking to. Antipater also accused him of the same crimes of which he had been formerly accused of Herod. Sylleus was also accused by Aretas, and that without his consent he had slain many of the chief Arabians at Petra. Yeah, that goes back a couple of chapters.
Yeah.
And particularly Soemus, a man that deserved to be honored by all men, and that he had slain Fabatus, a servant of Caesar. So there's all of this whacking going on of people, sometimes loyal to Rome, sometimes not. These were the things of which Sylleus was accused, and that the occasion following. There was one Corinthus, belonging to Herod, of the guards of the king's body, and one who was greatly trusted by him. Sylleus had persuaded this man with the offer of a great sum of money to kill Herod. Where have we heard this story before? This was a previous chapter. Somebody else persuaded one of the guards to kill Herod, so this is happening a second time. And he had promised to do it. When Fabatus had made acquaintance with this, for Sylleus had himself told him of it, he informed the king of it. You cannot brag. It will get you whacked.
Loose lips sink ships.
There you go. Who caught Corinthus and put him to the torture, and thereby got out of him the whole conspiracy. He also caught two other Arabians who were discovered by, I love to torture some of these Jews in Congress, were discovered by Corinthus, the one the head of a tribe and the other a friend to Sylleus, who both were by the king brought to torture and confessed that they were to come to encourage Corinthus not to fail in doing what he had undertaken to do. Well, did Corinthus actually mean to do it, or was he playing everybody for a fool? And to assist him with their own hands in the murder if the need should require their assistance. So Saturninus, upon Herod discovering the hole to him, sent them to Rome. Well, this whole brood of vipers is traveling to Rome, I hope in separate ships. Yes, they're going to whack each other before they get to Rome. Back to you.
Oh, man, Swamp Fox has got the Democratic debates will be a food fight like we've never seen before.
Right.
Knives will come out.
It's going to be entertaining.
Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah.
Herod,
Antipater, Salome, I mean, wow. Ferraris, all of these, there's counterparts to all of these characters in the Democratic Party, no doubt. This is going to be entertaining, folks.
And the Republican Party, they're interchangeable.
Right.
The Republicrats are no saints.
Right.
They've got a lot of Democrats that are posing as Republicans.
That's correct.
Section 3. At this time, Herod commanded Pheroras that since he was so obstinate in his affection for his wife, he should retire into his own tetrarchy.
Now, wait a minute. The guy loves his wife. Leave him alone, right? It's hard enough to stay married without people, interfering in your marriage. Back to you.
Right, which he did very willingly and swore many oaths that he would not come again until he heard that Herod was dead.
Okay.
And indeed, when, upon a sickness of the king, he was desired to come to him before he died, that he might entrust him with some of his injunctions, he had such a regard to his oath that he would not come to him.
Mm.
Yet did not Herod so retain his hatred to Pheroras, but remitted of his purpose not to see him, which he had before had, and that for such great causes as have been already mentioned. But as soon as he began to be ill, he came to him, and this without being sent for. And when he was dead, he took care of his funeral and had his body brought to Jerusalem and buried there, and appointed a solemn mourning for him. This death of Pheroras became the origin of Antipater's misfortunes, although he had already sailed for Rome, God now being about to punish him for the murder of his brothers. I will explain the history of this matter very distinctly, that it may be for a warning to mankind.
Oh, yeah, right. Have we learned?
That they take care of conducting their whole lives by the rules of virtue. In other words, be Torah observant.
There you go.
Torah is no longer complicated because Christ fulfilled all the sacrificial rituals which were the obstacles.
Right.
But the rules set down in there for life, don't steal, don't murder, don't do this, don't do that, they're all common sense and very simple.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't keep the Torah. Well, no, you can't keep some of it. That's why some of it is fulfilled. All that sacrificial stuff, Yeshua Messiah took care of that.
Mm-hmm. This is like the Jewish mob whacking one of their own and having a Catholic funeral.
There you go.
Okay. Chapter 4. Pheroras' wife is accused by his freedmen as guilty of poisoning him. Oh, no. But he loved her. Okay. And how Herod, upon examining of the matter by torture, found the poison. But so that it had been prepared for himself by his son Antipater, blamed the wife. And upon an inquiry by torture, he discovered the dangerous designs of Antipater. My own dear son. Of an Edomite viper.
My boy. How could you do this to me, you schmuck?
We should do a series called Viper Love. It would be Jews.
Remember that song? Remember that song, Muskrat Love?
Yeah, there you go. Right.
We need to do one Viper Love.
Viper Love, and we could have all these Jews pretending to love one another and stabbing each other in the back. Section one. As soon as Pheroras was dead, and his funeral was over, two of Pheroras's freedmen, who were much esteemed by him, came to Herod and entreated him not to leave the murder of his brother without avenging it, but to examine into such an unreasonable and unhappy death. When he was moved with these words, for they seemed to him to be true, they said that Pheroras supped with his wife the day before he fell sick, and that a certain potion was brought to him in a sort of food, as he was not... the matzo ball soup was poisoned in a sort of food as he was not used to eat. Okay? But that when he had eaten it, he died. That this potion was brought out of Arabia by a woman, under pretense indeed as a love potion, as if they needed it, for that it was its name, but in reality to kill Pheroras. For that the Arabian women are skillful in making such poisons, and the woman to whom they ascribe this was confessedly a most intimate friend of one of Sylleus's mistresses, who is unnamed. Too many names to remember already. And that both the mother and the sister of Pheroras's wife had been at the place where she lived. It was all conspiracy. And had persuaded her to sell them this potion, and had come back and brought it with them to the day before of this supper. Hereupon, the king was provoked, and put the women slaves to the torture, and some that were free with them. And as the fact did not yet appear, because none of them would confess it, at length one of them, under the utmost agonies, said no more but this, that she prayed that God would send the like agonies upon Antipater's mother, who had been the occasion of these miseries to all of them. And that was the truth. This prayer induced Herod to increase the women's torture. Oh, no. Don't pray, folks. It'll increase your torture. Till thereby all was discovered. Their merry meetings, their secret assemblies, and the disclosing of what he had said to his son alone unto Pheroras's women. Now, what Herod had charged Antipater to conceal was the gift of 100 talents to him, not to have any conversation with Pheroras. And what hatred he bore to his father, and that he complained to his mother how very long his father lived. Oh, yeah, I want to be king. Die, Herod, die. And that he was himself almost an old man, insomuch that if the kingdom should come to him, it would not afford him any great pleasure. And that there were a great many of his brothers or brothers' children bringing up that might have hopes of the kingdom as well as himself. Man, he wanted to be king so bad. He was going to whack his father, his mother, and everybody else related to him so that only he would be left. All which made his own hopes of it uncertain. For that even now, if he should himself not live, Herod had ordained that the government should be confirmed not on his son, but rather on a brother. He also had accused the king of great barbarity. Well, that would not have been a lie. And of the slaughter of his sons, and that it was out of the fear that he was under, lest he should do the like to him, that made him contrive this his journey to Rome, and Pheroras contrived to go to his own tetrarchy. And there's a footnote here. It seems to me, by this whole story put together, that Pheroras was not himself poisoned, as is commonly supposed. For Antipater had persuaded him to poison Herod, which would fall to the ground if he were himself poisoned. Nor could the poisoning of Pheroras serve any design that appears now going forward. It was only a supposal of the two of his freedmen that this love potion or poison, which they knew was brought to Pheroras' wife, was made use of for poisoning him, whereas it appears to have been brought for her husband to poison. Herod withal, as the future examination will demonstrate. Okay, yeah, I think they just made this story up. It's just one of the continuing, ongoing saga of lies upon lies upon lies, multiple accusations.
It's a rumor mill.
Yeah, right.
Just like Washington, just like all those mainstream news medias, Fox and all the rest of them. And, Hillary's going down. Hillary's going to be arrested. Hillary's at Gitmo. Hillary's dead.
Yep,
Hillary
right.
This, Hillary that.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yep. Yep. She's getting treated at her personal hospital.
Like all these Q posts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an ongoing drama.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see any results of it.
Yeah, no major person has yet to be arrested.
No.
Not yet. After 2 years of the Trump presidency, not one major person has been arrested.
No.
Back to you.
No, not Hillary, not Barack. No.
But they will get whacked. Like a Herod style, they will get whacked. Okay.
They might have...
like Seth Rich.
An accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Amazing.
Section 2. These confessions agreed with what his sister had told him, intended greatly to corroborate her testimony and to free her from the suspicion of her unfaithfulness to him. So the king, having satisfied himself on the spite which Doris, Antipater's mother, as well as himself, bore to him, took away from her all her fine ornaments, which were worth many talents, that's money, silver money, and then sent her away and entered into friendship with Pheroras's women.
So he gets rid of his Edomite wife, puts her out of the way, didn't kill her, just put her out of the way, and now has friendships with all the other women around there. Okay, back to you.
You want to be my special friend.
Yeah, right. Man.
But he, who most of all irritated the king against his son, was one Antipater, the procurator of Antipater, the king's son. Another Antipater.
Uh-huh.
Man, right. How many Antipaters are there?
Way too many.
Well, that's just like the name Jehoshaphat.
Right.
There's 14 or 15 of them.
All right.
Not just one.
Mm-hmm.
Who, when he was tortured, among other things, said that Antipater had prepared a deadly potion and given it to Pheroras with his desire that he would give it to his father during his absence. And when he was too remote to have the least suspicion cast upon him, thereto relating. In other words, he had an alibi. I was out of town. That Antipholus, one of Antipater's friends, brought that potion out of Egypt, and that it was sent to Pheroras by Theudion, the brother of the mother of Antipater, the king's son. And by that means came to Pheroras' wife, her husband having given it her to keep. Here, hold this for me, honey.
Yeah, right.
And we'll put this in your cabinet.
Yeah, right.
And when the king asked her about it, she confessed it. And as she was running to fetch it, she threw herself down from the housetop, yet she did not kill herself because she fell upon her feet.
Wow. Yeah, she's like a cat. She landed like a cat.
Oh, well, I'm not dead. By which means, when the king had comforted her and promised her and her servants pardon upon condition of their concealing nothing of the truth from him, but had threatened her with the utmost miseries if she proved ungrateful.
In addition to her broken
anything.
Legs, right?
So she promised and swore that she would speak out everything and tell after what manner everything was done, and said what many took to be entirely true, that the potion was brought out of Egypt by Antipholus, and that his brother, who was a physician, had procured it, And that when Theudion brought it, she kept it upon Pheroras's committing it to her, and that it was prepared by Antipater for you.
Mm-hmm. Antipater himself.
Therefore, Pheroras was fallen sick, and you came to him and took care of him. And when you saw the kindness you had for him, his mind was overborne thereby. So he called me to him and said, O woman, Antipater has circumvented me in this affair of his father and my brother by persuading me to have a murderous intention to him and procuring a potion to be subservient thereto. Therefore, go and get my potion, since my brother appears to have still the same virtuous disposition toward me, which he had formerly, and I do not expect to live long myself, and that I may not defile my forefathers by the murder of a brother, and burn it before my face. That accordingly she immediately brought it and did as her husband directed her, and that she burned the greatest part of the potion, but that a little of it was left, that if the king, after Pheroras' death, should treat her ill, she might poison herself and thereby get clear of her misery.
Wow.
Commit suicide.
Yeah, it's miserable to be alive in the court of Herod. Wow.
Well, and torture and all that.
Yeah.
Upon her saying thus, she brought out the potion and the box in which it was before them all. Nay, there was another brother of Antipholus, and his mother also, who, by the extremity of pain and torture, confessed the same things and owned the box to be that which had been brought out of Egypt. The high priest's daughter also, who was the king's wife, was accused to have been conscious of all this and resolved to conceal it. For which reason Herod divorced her and blotted her son out of his testament, wherein he had been mentioned as one that was to reign after him, and he took the high priesthood away from his father-in-law, Simeon, the son of Boethus, and appointed Matthias, the son of Theophilus, who was born at Jerusalem, to be high priest in his place. This is intrigue upon intrigue upon intrigue, and people confessing to the same crime, and you just can't get a straight answer from any of these people.
Amazing. Well, at least these last two people weren't killed. They were just put away by Herod. They got off well. All right, section 3. While this was doing, Bathyllus, also Antipater's freedman, came from Rome, and upon torture was found to have brought another potion to give it to the hands of Antipater's mother. So there's all kinds of potions floating around. And of Pheroras, that if the former potion did not operate upon the king, this at least might carry him off. There came also letters from his friends at Rome, by the approbation and at the suggestion of Antipater, to accuse Archelaus and Philip as if they calumniated their father on account of the slaughter of Alexander and Aristobulus. But everybody already knew that Antipater had murdered Alexander and Aristobulus. So what's the accusation, that Archelaus and Philip were part of the plot? Man, I was not alone. I had two accomplices. Kill them. And as if they commiserated their deaths, and as if, because they were sent for home, for their father had already recalled them, they concluded they were themselves also to be destroyed. Yeah, it's you'd be accused by Antipater, that's a death sentence. These letters had been procured by great rewards by Antipater's friends. In other words, they were forgeries paid for. But Antipater himself wrote to his father about them and laid the heaviest things to their charge. Yet did he entirely excuse them of any guilt, and said they were but young men, and so imputed their words to their youth. So he excused the two Jews. But he said, that he had himself been very busy in the affair of relating to Silius and in getting interest among the great men. And on that account, he bought splendid ornaments to present them with all, which cost him 200 talents. Now, one may wonder how it came about that while so many accusations were laid against him in Judea during 7 months before this time, he was not made acquainted with any of them, the cause of which were that the roads were exactly guarded, and that men hated Antipater, for there was nobody who would run any hazards himself to gain him any advantages. So nobody was willing to send him any intelligence, because they wanted him to die, right? So you want me to help him? No, sorry, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. So who was more evil, Antipater or Herod? Wow, what a question, eh? All right, chapter 5.
There's a very simple answer.
They both.
Yes. Who was more evil,
yes,
Antipater or Herod? Yes. Uh-huh. They're both more evil. Chapter 5. Antipater's navigation from Rome to his father, and how he was accused by Nicolaus of Damascus and condemned to die by his father and by Quintilius Varus, who was then president of Syria, and how he was then bound until Caesar should be informed of his cause.
Okay.
Are we going to see Antipater get his in this chapter?
Yeah. Well, he went to Rome to avoid this. Yeah, he went to Rome to avoid this. But he's not going to avoid it. Yep.
Dun da 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 da. The old
first scene.
Right.
Action. Section one.
Now Herod, upon Antipater's writing to him, that having done all that he was to do, and this in the manner he was to do it, he would suddenly come to him, concealed his anger against him, and wrote back to him and directed him not to delay his journey, lest any harm should befall himself in his absence. At the same time, also, he made some little complaint about his mother, but promised that he would lay those complaints aside when he should return. So he expressed his entire affection for him.
Yeah.
They just loved one another.
Yeah, right.
As fearing lest he should have some suspicion of him, and defer his journey to him, unless, while he lived at Rome, he should lay plots for the kingdom, and moreover, do something against him himself.
Well, that's what he went to Rome for.
This is paranoia exemplified.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't trust anybody. This letter Antipater met with in Cilicia, but had received an account of Pheroras' death before at Tarentum. This last news affected him deeply, not out of any affection for Pheroras, but because he was dead without having murdered his father, which he had promised him to do. Oh,
plot
doggone
failed.
Me, died before he could kill the old man.
Yeah, right.
Man. Man, what a crew. And when he was at Cilindrus in Cilicia, he began to deliberate with himself about his sailing home, as being much grieved with the ejection of his mother. Now, some of his friends advised him that he should wait a while somewhere in expectation of further information. But others advised him to sail home without delay, for that if he were once come there, he would soon put an end to all accusations, and that nothing afforded any weight to his accusers at present but his absence. While the cat's away, the mouse will play.
That's right.
He was persuaded by these last and sailed on and landed at the haven called Sebastus, which Herod had built at vast expenses in honor of Caesar, and called Sebastus. And now was Antipater evidently in a miserable condition. While nobody came to him nor saluted him as they did at his going away, with good wishes and
acclamation. Nor was there
now to anything to hinder them from entertaining him, on the contrary, with bitter curses.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, you SOB, what are you doing back here? Blah, 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 blah. While they supposed he was come to receive his punishment for the murder of his brothers.
So why is everybody ignoring me? Nobody's coming to say hello. What's going on? Section two.
Everybody hates you.
This is incredible stuff. Section two. Now, Quintilius Varus was at this time at Jerusalem, being sent to succeed Saturninus as president of Syria. And was come as an assessor to Herod, who had desired his advice in his present affairs. And as they were sitting together, Antipater came upon them, without knowing anything of the matter. So he came into the palace clothed in purple. The porters indeed received him in, but excluded his friends. And now he was in great disorder, and presently understood the condition he was in, while upon his going to salute his father, he was repulsed by him, who called him a murderer of his brethren and a plotter of destruction against himself. Well, that's a fine how do you do. And told him that Varus should be his auditor and his judge the very next day. So he found that what misfortunes he now heard of was already upon him, with the greatness of which he went away in confusion, upon which his mother and his wife met him, which wife was the daughter of Antigonus, who was king of the Judeans before Herod, from whom he learned all circumstances which concerned him, and then prepared himself for his trial. Wow. He should have stayed in Rome. Back to you.
Oh, he just walked right into it, didn't he?
Yeah. Wow.
Man. Section three. This is so exciting.
Yeah, right.
On the next day, Varus and the king sat together in judgment, and both their friends were also called in, as also the king's relations with his sister Salome, and as many as could reveal anything, and such as had been tortured. And besides these, some slaves of Antipater's mother, who were taken up a little before Antipater's coming, and brought with them a written letter, the sum of which was this, I quote, that he should not come back, because all was come to his father's knowledge, and that Caesar was the only refuge he had left to prevent both his and her delivery into his father's hands. Then did Antipater fall down at his father's feet and begged him not to prejudge his cause, but that he might be first heard by his father, and that his father would keep himself unprejudiced. So Herod ordered him to be brought into the midst, and then lamented himself about his children, from whom he had suffered great misfortunes, and because Antipater fell upon him in his old age. He also reckoned up what maintenance and what education he had given them, and what seasonable supplies of wealth he had afforded them according to their own desires, none of which favors had hindered them from contriving against him, and from bringing his very life into danger in order to gain his kingdom after an impious manner, by taking away his life before the course of nature. Their father's wishes or justice required that the kingdom should come to them. and that he wondered what hopes could elevate Antipater to such a pass as to be hardy enough to attempt such things, that he had, by his testament in writing, declared him his successor in the government, and while he was alive, he was in no respect inferior to him, either in his illustrious dignity or in power and authority, and having no less than 50 talents for his yearly income, and had received for his journey to Rome no fewer than 30 talents. He was greedy. Mm-hmm. He also objected to him the case of his brothers whom he had accused, and if they were guilty, he had imitated their example, and if not, he had brought him groundless accusations against his near relations, for that he had been acquainted with all those things by him and by nobody else, and had done what was done by his approval, and whom he now absolved from all that was criminal by becoming the inheritor of the guilt of such their patricide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It looks like Herod is not about to be convinced by any testimony of his son, but let's see. Section 4. And we have about 10 minutes left. I think we can fit this in. When Herod had thus spoken, he fell a-weeping and was not able to say any more. But at his desire, Nicolaus of Damascus, being the king's friend and always conversant with him and acquainted with whatever he did and with the circumstances of his affairs, proceeded with what remained and explained all that concerned the demonstrations and evidences of the facts. Upon which Antipater, in order to make his legal defense, turned himself to his father and enlarged upon the many indications he had given of his goodwill to him, an instance in the honors that had been done to him, which yet had not been done, but had he not deserved them by his virtuous concern about him. For that he had made provision for everything that was fit to be foreseen beforehand as to giving him his wisest advice. I've been a good son, Dad. I've been a good son. And whenever there was occasion for that labor of his own hands, he had not grudged any such pains for him. And that it was almost impossible that he, who had delivered his father from so many treacherous contrivances laid against him, should be in a plot against him, and so lose all the reputation he had gained for his virtue by his wickedness which succeeded it. And this while he had nothing to prohibit him, who was already appointed to his successor, to enjoy the royal honor with his father also at present, and that there was no likelihood that a person who had the one half of that authority, without any danger and with a good character, should hunt after the whole with infamy and danger, and this when it was doubtful whether he could obtain it or not. I wouldn't do such a thing. I already had half the kingdom. And when he saw the sad example of his brethren before him, and was both the informer and accuser against them at a time when they might not otherwise have been discovered, now I'm the one who discovered all these plots to you, father. Nay, was the author of the punishment inflicted upon them when it appeared evidently that they were guilty of a wicked attempt against their father, and that even the contentions that were in the king's family were indications that he had ever managed affairs out of the sincerest affection of his father. So, in other words, he's putting all the blame on the two sons, his stepbrothers, accusing them, and they're the ones guilty of everything. And as to what he had done at Rome, Caesar was a witness thereto, who was yet no more to be imposed upon than God himself, of whose opinions his letters sent hither are sufficient evidence, and that it was not reasonable to prefer the calumnies of such as proposed to raise disturbances before those letters. Again, putting all the blame upon his two stepbrothers. The greatest part of which calumnies had been raised during his absence, which gave scope to his enemies to forge them, which they had not been able to do if he had been there. Moreover, he showed the weakness of the evidence obtained by torture, which was commonly false, because the distressed men are in under such tortures naturally obliges them to say many things in order to please those that govern them. He also offered himself to the torture. Okay, that's about the best he can do, right? That's about the best he can do. Yeah, well, evidence under torture is usually unreliable, but people do it anyway, I guess, because they like torturing people. Edomites like torturing.
Well,
you know,
I mean, they have to have a hobby.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? Okay, I guess I misread the clock. There's about 9 minutes left. So if you want to undertake section five, it's quite
I read
long.
Fairly quickly.
Okay.
So let's, we can stop in the middle. I'll mark it and we'll pick it up. We'll next week. No problem.
Very good.
Section five. Pardon me. But there was a change observed in the assembly while they greatly pitied Antipater, who by weeping and putting on a countenance suitable to his sad case made them commiserate.
Well, no, he didn't want to die, right?
That doesn't make
anybody sad. Yeah, right.
I'm such a victim. Insomuch that his very enemies were moved to compassion.
Wow.
And it appeared plainly that Herod himself was affected in his own mind, although he was not willing it should be taken notice of.
Right.
Then did Nicolaus begin to prosecute what the king had begun, and that with great bitterness, and summed up all the evidence which arose from the tortures or from the testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
He mainly and largely cried up the king's virtues, which he had exhibited in the maintenance and education of his sons. Well, he never could gain any advantage thereby, but still fell from one misfortune to another. Although he owned that he was not so much surprised with that thoughtless behavior of his former sons, who were but young and were besides corrupted by wicked counselors, who were the occasion of their wiping out of their minds the righteous dictates of nature, and this out of a desire coming to the government sooner than they ought to.
Mm.
It wasn't their fault. They were beguiled.
That's right.
Yet that he could not but justly stand amazed at the horrid weaknesses of Antipater, who, although he had not only great benefits bestowed on him by his father, enough to tame his reason, yet could not be more tame than the most venomous serpent.
Oh, now we're talking.
Whereas even those creatures admit some of some mitigation.
They
do. And will not bite their benefactors.
Yes, they will. Snakes will bite each other.
He's
exaggerating.
You have a pet snake, he's going to bite you.
There you go.
While Antipater had not let the misfortunes of his brothers be any hindrance to him, but he has gone on to imitate their barbarity notwithstanding.
Mm.
Yet were you, O Antipater, as you have yourself confessed, the informer as to what wicked actions they had done, in other words, you snitched on your brothers,
mm-hmm.
and the searcher out of the evidence against them, and the author of the punishment they underwent upon their detection.
That's right.
Nor do we say this as accusing you for being so zealous in your anger against them, but are astonished at your endeavors to imitate their immoral behavior. And we discover thereby that you did not act thus for the safety of your father, but for the destruction of your brothers. That by such outside hatred of their impiety, you might be believed a lover of your father, and might thereby get you power enough to do mischief with the greatest impunity, which design your actions indeed demonstrate. It is true, you took your brothers off because you did convict them of their wicked designs, But you did not yield up to justice those who were their partners, and thereby did make it evident to all men that you made a covenant with them against your father when you chose to be the accuser of your brothers. As desirous to gain to yourself alone this advantage of laying plots to kill your father, and so to enjoy double pleasure, which is truly worthy of your evil disposition, which you have openly showed against your brothers, on which account you did rejoice, as having done a most famous exploit, nor was that behavior unworthy of you.
Yes.
But if your intentions were otherwise, you are worse than they. While you did contrive to hide your treachery against your father, you did hate them, not as plotters against your father, for in that case you had not yourself fallen upon the like crime, but as successors of his dominions, and more worthy of that succession than yourself, who was jealous of his brother.
Right. No doubt.
You would kill your father after your brothers, lest your lies raised against them might be detected, and lest you should suffer what punishment you had deserved. You had a mind to exact that punishment of your unhappy father, and did devise such a sort of uncommon patricide as the world never yet saw. For you, who are his son, did not only lay a treacherous design against your father, and did it while he loved you and had been your benefactor, had made you in reality his partner in the kingdom, and had openly declared you his successor, while you were not forbidden to taste the sweetness of authority already, and had the firm hope of what was future by your father's determination and the security of a written testament.
Jeez.
But for certain, you did not measure these things according to your father's various disposition, but according to your own thoughts and inclinations, and was desirous to take the part that remained away from you to indulgent father. Oh, he was so indulgent.
Yeah, such a right.
Such a nice guy. And sought to destroy him with your deeds, whom you in words pretended to preserve.
Wow. Okay. I think we got to end it there. We got to end it there. Because
we got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just about women.
All right. Well, a couple more episodes of Herod and the history of this crazy viper family. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition, folks. See you next time.